Good morning, everybody. Welcome to another Beit Shemesh Community Beit Midrash Initiative. Again, I want to thank all the Bete Knesset and the Yoshei Rosh for their support. Of course, we have the Yoshei Rosh and Beit Knesset Nezach Menashe here. I want to thank him personally, Avi, for all your support and help throughout the years. Thank, of course, all the Menachem and Beit Chaim and Nofei HaShemesh and Nofei Aviv, and of course, the hosting shul today, the Trash Tori Lami. This idea came about a few years ago when we said, you know, all the shuls are doing wonderful things, but what about doing something together? You know, getting all the shuls together, coming together. And of course, today, I want to thank David Feinberg for publicizing it for the YURBS, the special WhatsApp group for RBS people for YU Torah. And it's a big schus to have Rabbi Salovsky with us today. I brought him some little snack today in our in my RJC lunch bag, which is the Real Jewish Center, which is where I wanted Svi to feel at home, because that's where we grew up together at the RJC and NSAR. So just want to let... it's obviously the first halacha says, Havei Karatz Ketzvi. You know, should run like a Tzvi to Lavadas Aboyre. So I always think about Tzvi whenever I learn that halacha, because not only does Svi Soloski run Lavadas Abore, but boy, I remember him, he knew how to run. He was the superstar in everything he touched. There wasn't anything that Svi couldn't do, whether it be karate, basketball, anything. I know that he wanted to become at one point a doctor, and I know that he would probably been the world's specialist, but Baruch Hashem, he became the Gadol B'Torah and Rosh Hashiva at Yeshiva University, and the Rav in Caleb Bergenfield, or Torah in Bergenfield, and we're so honored to have him here to deliver a shir, Vashev, Kohanim Lavotam, Kohanim, present, past, present, and future. Rossi.
Thank you so much, Brian, for those very, very meaningful words of introduction. It's always a schus for me to be able to join you. We have an ongoing chazocha here for quite some time. I have to apologize that it's usually Erev Tisha B'Av. Usually it's Erev Shabbos Chazon this year. I'm not be able to do it next Friday, so we had a little bit of Zri, hopefully Zri Zabak Dibin LaMitzvos in this sense. So I want to talk about a sugya today.
Are you talking to it? Talking from here? Because it doesn't. Not just yeah.
Okay. Get this right. I want to speak about. Is it better? Okay. I want to speak about a sugya today, which is very much a sugya in halacha, a sugya that touches on machshava as well. It's something that is very much relevant to halacha lemaisa for those kohanim in our midst, for sure, even for the Israeli, myself included in our midst. It has some very, very serious halacha lemaisa ramifications, but really with an eye on the future, because as we are beginning today, of course, Rosh Chodesh Av. So we begin the next stage of Avelos for the Churban Beis HaMikdash. So we always look to the future. Hashem Kohanim Lavodasam. That hopefully in this chus of this year, in this Limud HaTorah, this should be one step closer to seeing the Kohanim and the Beis HaMikdash coming back in its full glory. An additional dimension as to why I think the Shir is appropriate dafka for today, we know that Yurtzites play a major role in Torah. But interestingly enough, there are almost no Yurtzites mentioned in the Chumash itself. Almost none except for one, which happens to be today. The only Yurtzite, even Moshe Rabbeinu's Yurtzite, we only know through Tosha B'Peh. The only Yurtzite that is mentioned in Tosha B'Tzav is the Yurtzite of Aaron HaKohen, which is on the first day of the fifth month, i.e. Rosh Chodesh Av, which happens to be today. So what more appropriate thing to talk about on the Yurtzite of Aaron HaKohen is about his... Okay. It's about his descendants. Don't worry about it. Every single shiur that I've given so far with a microphone over the last 6 months, it's not a problem. So don't feel bad about it. This is just I always find it fascinating. Usually, like at any yeshiva dinner that you go to, there's something wrong with the video. It never fails. There's always something wrong with the video. So I guess we are just not destined to be a nation of where binaschem leinei ha'amim, but somehow in this area we. So what more appropriate time than Rosh Chodesh Av than to focus on the legacy of Aaron HaKohen? And again, we're going to speak primarily in the world of Halacha, but of course we're going to use it towards the end as a little bit of a segue in terms of Machshava and Devei Chizuk Besoros as well. So our sugya begins in the world of Halacha with a very, very bizarre story that occurred in the days of the Rishonim, in the days of the Baal HaTosfos. It started off as almost like a very innocent story and then opened up for itself an entire world of lamdas. So the first of the Manukamos, the story is related in the Hagos HaMordechai. The Mordechai, just a historical background. So the Mordechai was a Talmud of the Maharam of Ruthenberg. He was a contemporary of the Rosh. The Mordechai actually was killed al Kiddush Hashem in the Middle Ages. So the Sefer Mordechai is written in the back of every Masechta. And then the Hagos Mordechai, the parts that were left out of the first Mordechai, added into the, as additional notes, all coming back from the that great Rishon the Mordechai, who relates the following story. Ma'isa b'kohen, shiyotzak mayim al yadei Rabbeinu Tam. That one time, one of Rabbeinu Tam's Talmidim was a Kohen. He wanted it was his day to serve the Rebbe. He decided he's going to help Rabbeinu Tam wash the Tils Yadayim. So he fills up the water and helps Rabbeinu Tam wash the Tils Yadayim. V'hik shalal Talmid. And all of a sudden, the world exploded. That somebody asked, one of the students asked, wait a second, Hashanir b'Rishalmi, the Rishalmi says, Hamishtamesh b'kohuna mo'al, that one is not allowed to use a Kohen for your own private purposes. And if you use a Kohen to do something for you, if you make a Kohen work for you, that's tantamount to me'ilah. That's like using something that belongs to the Beis HaMikdash. If a person uses an animal or a stone or anything that belongs to the Beis HaMikdash, that is a problem of me'ilah. You're being nana, you're benefiting from the Beis HaMikdash. So using a Kohen for private purposes is a violation of me'ilah. That was a question that was posed. How in the world did Rabbeinu Tam permit his student to pour his water on his hands? Wasn't that a violation of Mishtamish B'Kohen Mo? So Rabbeinu Tam responded with the following, the Heishiv Lo, Ein bem kedusha b'zman hazeh. No problem, says Rabbeinu Tam. The Kohanim today do not have kedusha, do not have sanctity. What is that based on? The Kaimalon, because the Gemara tells us in Maseches Bachim. Should we try it? Can people hear me without it?
It's fine without it.
It's out without it. The general rule is.
That's the second general rule.
Well, okay, sure, thank you. Rabbeinu Tam makes reference to a Gemara in Maseches Vachim that if a Kohen is not wearing his big de kahuna, which obviously in France in the 1200s, 1100s, nobody's walking around wearing big de kahuna, if a Kohen is not wearing his big de kahuna, the kaimlam big deyam alam kedusha alam, when he's wearing the big tekuna, he has kedusha. V'ilolo, if he's not wearing the big tekuna, then not. Now, the original context of that statement had nothing to do with washing the Tils Yadayim. The original context of that statement was the sugya in the second berakha Maseches Bachim, where the Mishnah tells us that if a Kohen does the avodah in the Beis HaMikdash and is not dressed properly, is not wearing the proper big tekuna, then the avodah is disqualified, because he's considered to be like a non-Kohen. Because a Kohen is only his Kedusha sanctity, is only complete if and when he's dressed appropriately wearing the big de kahuna that are described in Pashas Tetzaveh. So Rabbeinu Tam made quite a jump, and he said, just as in Hilchos Karbonos, a Kohen who's not wearing big de kahuna is basically not a Kohen, so too, the Kohen, the student of mine, who's pouring water on my hand is not a problem, because he's not a Kohen, because he's not wearing the big de kahuna. So wait a second, v'hiksha. So then that Talmud posed the next question. Imkain, kol mini kedusha lavidlu. If that's the case, that halacha carries over to other areas of kedusha's kahuna as well, so then maybe it should apply to all of the halachas of kahuna. Imagine the following phenomenal kulas. A Kohen wants to go to the cemetery, wants to go to a funeral, no problem. As long as he's not wearing the big de kahuna, then it's okay, he's not a Kohen. Kohen wants to marry a woman who he's not permitted to marry, a grusha, no problem. As long as he doesn't wear the big tekuna, everything's okay. But it has some downsides also. The Kohen wants to get up to duchen, you can't duchen, you're not wearing big tekuna. You want to receive money for Pidyon HaBen? Well, you're not wearing Bikdei Kehuna. So obviously, that idea of wearing Bikdei Kehuna, being an integral part of Kedushas Kehuna, is clearly not the case. That's what these students were questioning Rabbeinu Tam. That what in the world did Rabbeinu Tam mean? What did Rabbeinu Tam, what was he alluding to when he said that the Kohanim not wearing the Begadim are not considered to be Kohanim? Clearly, that is absolutely not true. V'shosek Rabbeinu Tam. Rabbeinu Tam was quiet. Rabbeinu Tam didn't respond. And this, of course, always opens up a question when you have a earth-shattering question against somebody, a Rishon of the stature of Rabbeinu Tam, makes such a statement that seems to be absolutely incorrect, and he doesn't even bother responding. So what do we make of that? How should we interpret this? Now, again, it's hard for us. We're sitting back 700-800 years later. We're sitting in Beit Shemesh trying to figure out what in the world was going on by the Netil Sadaim station in France back in the 1100s. So, you know, we're kind of rewrite history a little bit. What exactly happened? Why didn't Rabbeinu Tam respond? So there are two ways of understanding why Rabbeinu Tam didn't respond. Either Rabbeinu Tam didn't respond because he realized that he made a mistake. Highly unlikely that Rabbeinu Tam, a man of that stature, would have made such a silly mistake. Or Rabbeinu Tam didn't respond because the answer was so obvious that he thought the question was so incorrect, was so flawed, that he didn't even bother responding because the answer was something that anybody could have figured out. Assuming that is correct, so what was the answer? So why isn't it a good question? So here the Acharonim explained that Rabbeinu Tam was probably driving at us as follows. That I guess it's always appropriate when you learn a sugya related to Beis HaMikdash, you start off with a Bris Ketorah. There are two halachas. There are really two different halachas of Kohuna. Kohen is almost wearing two different hats. Not literally, but figuratively. He's actually really, there are two components. There are two dimensions of a Kohen. There's a Kohen as an integral part of Beis HaMikdash. A Kohen is one of the Klei HaMikdash. The same way that there's a Mizbeach, and there's an Aron, and there's a Shulchan, and there's a Menorah, there is a Kohen. A Kohen is one of the parts of the Beis HaMikdash. Actually, the Rambam, when he discusses many of the halachas of Bikdei Kehuna, he speaks about them in Hilchos Klei HaMikdash VeHa'ovdim Bo. He lumps together into one set of halachas. There's the Aron, Shulchan, Mizbeach, Menorah, and the Kohanim. Even if you look at Chumash, it appears that way. The Torah speaks about Parshas Truma, which speaks about the Klei HaMishkan, and then the very next Parsha speaks about the Bikdei Kehuna, about the Kedushas Kehuna, because they're really one grouping. So a Kohen is part of the Beis HaMikdash structure. However, a Kohen has halachas that go well beyond the Beis HaMikdash. A Kohen is not allowed to be metame lemesim, not permitted to marry certain women. A Kohen duchins, a Kohen does pidyon haben, a Kohen is given truma, even in the absence of a Beis HaMikdash. There's no Beis HaMikdash. These things, many of these things that I mentioned, take place even in Chutz Laretz. So clearly, there's a role of Kedushas Kehuna. Kohen gets his first aliyah, even when there's no Beis HaMikdash. So obviously, there's a dimension of Kedushas Kehuna which goes above and beyond Beis HaMikdash. So there are really two different halachas. There's a Kohen that's part of the Beis HaMikdash, and there's the extended Kohen, almost what we call the Kohen of Gvul and of Chutz LaMikdash.
So I know that the halacha distinguishes between Dochening, you know, how high the hands could be Dochening in the Beis HaMikdash, but Gvulin. But really, the Iker, and you know, that fine, not everyone's bringing the baby to the Beis HaMikdash, but really, Dochening, the Makor of Dochening, is in the Beis HaMikdash. I mean, where do they arrive at that extent? And if that extends, why doesn't everything extend?
Very good, excellent. Okay, good. So we're going to try to fine tune this for a moment. So you're right, 100%. Dochening is a big question whether the Iker really is the Mikdash, everything else is kind of secondary or not. That's a loaded question. But there clearly are parts of Kehuna that are not Beis HaMikdash per se. The fact that a Kohen cannot marry a Grusha, that is even Bizman Hazeh. That Issa Min HaTorah exists even today, even in the absence of a Beis HaMikdash. So perhaps what Rabbeinu Tam was driving at is as follows, that this halacha, Mishtamish B'Kohen Mal, that the Rishami tells us that you're not allowed to use a Kohen for your own private purposes. Which aspect of Kehuna does this emanate from? Is this part of the Kohen as Mikdash, or is this part of the Kohen as Chutz LaMikdash? So clearly the very word Me'ilah should be a dead giveaway. Me'ilah is something that we always identify with the Beis HaMikdash. I'm not allowed to use something that belongs to the Beis HaMikdash. So the Kohen belongs to the Beis HaMikdash. So this is what Rabbeinu Tam meant to say, that when do we say that the Kohen belongs to the Beis HaMikdash? When do we say that the Kohen is a Klei HaMikdash? That's when he's dressed up in the Bikdei Kehuna, when he's serving in the Beis HaMikdash. So b'shas that he's wearing the Bikdei Kehuna, he becomes an integral part of the tzura, of the structure, of the binyan, of the Mikdash, of the Mishkan. And under those circumstances, mishtamish b'kohen ma'al. What Rabbeinu Tam was explaining to his Tamidim, without elaborating on it, was is that we live in France. It's the 1100s. Nobody's wearing big tikkunah today. And therefore, although, yes, the Kohen cannot marry a grusha, and yes, it's true, the Kohen cannot be metamin lemesim, and yes, it's true, we're going to give the Kohen the first aliyah, and he can receive pidgin aben. All of that is true, but all of those halachas emanate from his role as a Kohen chutz lamikdash. The mikdash, me'ila, big tikkuna, that basically doesn't apply in France in the 1100s. That was what the response of Rabbi Natan probably was. But the Talmidim weren't even sure what Rabbi Natan meant. Again, we're trying to recreate what Rabbi Natan meant. The Talmidim themselves weren't even sure. And therefore, one of Rabbi Natan's Talmidim suggested an alternate answer to the original question. How can it be that a Kohen can serve you? How can you ask a Kohen to do you a favor? How can you ask a Kohen to pour water on your hands? So the Mordechai, I'm sorry, the Gos Mordechai quotes in the third line, Teheshiv Rabbeinu. Now this becomes a little bit tricky, what the next word is. It's a name of a Rishon, it's a name of one of the Balei Tosfos, how to pronounce it. Now in the Olam HaYeshivas, they're very, very weary to pronounce it the way it's probably supposed to be pronounced. It was probably the name Peter. It was an English name, it was a Goyish name. That we know, there are a lot of people who today have non-Jewish names. So Peter was a famous name in the Middle Ages. So probably one of the Talmidim of Rabbeinu Tam's name was Rabbeinu Peter. But somehow the yeshivas, well, they can't remember themselves to say that. So they have renamed Rabbeinu Peter Rabbeinu Peter. Why exactly Rabbeinu Peter sounds, but Peter Chamor, I'm not sure why that sounds better. But somehow that sounds a little more yeshivish that his name was Rabbeinu Peter. But whoever he was, he responded the following. He said, no. To Nehid the Yeshbam Kedusha, says Rabbeinu Peter, that the reason why they're permitted to be, why you're permitted to use the Kohen to pour water, not because they don't have Kedusha, but rather Yochol Limchol, but rather because the Kohen has a right to be Mochel on his Kedusha, Mochel on his Kavod. Now we're familiar with this from other areas of Halacha. Let's say, for example, a parent can be Mochel on Kavod. A Rebbe can be mochel on kavod. So Rabbeinu Peter is saying that so too a Kohen can be mochel on his kavod as well. And therefore this young Kohen student, this Talmid Rabbeinu Tam, he was thrilled to serve his Rebbe. He was mochel on his kavod, and that's the reason why it was okay. How do we know this is true? What's the source for this idea that a Kohen can be mochel on his kavod? So Mordechai continues. A whole complicated sugya in Maseches Kedushin. If you have a Kohen who's an Eved Ivri, can you pierce his ear at the end of the 6 years? He's going to become a Baal Mum. A whole complicated, convoluted sugya. Wait a second. How did the Kohen become the Eved Ivri in the first place? How could you work? Could you have a guy work for you? He's going to sweep your floor. He's going to mop your floor for you. Mishtamish b'koyim mo'al. So the answer is, Matzi Mochel, that he was Mochel. He sold himself as an Eved Ivri. He was Mochel. So the bottom line is, we have two different reasons in the Gedolei Rishonim to defend the practice of using Kohanim today. So there are some who suggest, Rabbi Natan meant, that the Issa doesn't apply today because we don't have Big Tikkuna, but we have to kind of fine-tune that a little bit. That means the dinim of Kohen B'Torah's Mikdash don't apply B'Zman Hazeh. But the other reason that's suggested in the Mordechai is that the Kohen can be Moichel. There are some Rishonim who may argue with both, who may say that the question is better than the answer, and the answer is, in Ochanami, you in fact can't have a Kohen serve you. That would be a loaded chumra for us. So some people try to be machmen in this if they can. It means they won't ask a Kohen to go, you know, your next door neighbor Kohen is running to the store, oh, can you please do me a favor, go bring me home some yogurts or something. So most people are making on this, but there are some who are machmer that they don't want to rely neither on Rabbeinu Tam's reason nor on Rabbeinu Peter's reason. They say inachinami, but in fact it's really prohibited. But again, the minhag ha'olam, most people are pretty lenient today for one of these two reasons. We don't take this so literally, this halacha of mishtamish b'koyim mo'al. So we mentioned that there seem to be two different types of kohanim. So one is Kedushas HaMikdash and one is Chutz LaMikdash. But for sure, there are two other dimensions of Kohanim, and that's really based on the second of the Mar Mekomos. And the series of Psukim tucked away in Sefer Ezra. The Psukim in Ezra, the context of the Psukim in Ezra, are describing the beginning of Bayisheni, where some members of Klai Yisrael returned to Eretz Yisrael, a very, very small percentage. But out of those group who returned, so there were a group of Kohanim who returned, but there was a big problem, because during the days of Bayis Rishon, so all the Kohanim had what we call Ksav Yichus. They were Kohanim Yichusim. They had actual documentation as to who was a Kohen, his father was a Kohen, his grandfather, all the way back to Aaron HaKohen. and during the 70 years of Golos, after the Churban Bayis Rishon, so some of that fell into disuse. It wasn't so important anymore. Nobody really cared whether you're a Kohen. You're not doing a vote anyway. And slowly but surely, some people couldn't dig up those documents. And now you had two different groups in Eretz Yisrael returned in the days of Ezra. Some Kohanim still had those documentations, and others did not. So the Pesukim describe Elu Bikshu Ksavam M'Siachas Evelonim Tzo, that a group of the Kohanim tried to find their Ksav Yichus, couldn't find it. They go alum in Akuna. They were rejected. They weren't permitted to serve in the Beis Hamikdash. The Yomar Tishas Alehem Ashelo Yochlu Mikodesh Hakadoshim and Amad Kohen LeUrim V'Tumim. So Hatishas, which Chazal interpret to mean, was Nehemia. So Nehemia said to them, if you can't prove that you're Kohanim beyond the shadow of a doubt, so then you cannot eat Karbanos until we're going to have a Kohen who's going to be serving with the Urim V'Tumim, which is another way of saying you have to wait a long time because there was the Urim V'Tumim, at least in the formal sense during Bayis Sheni. So the bottom line is, it's clear from this Pesukim in the Gemara Maseches Kedushin, the fourth parak elaborates upon this Pesukim, that you had this phenomenon now that exists in Bayis Sheni, two tiers of Kohanim. You had Kohanim who were Kohanim Miyuchosim, who were able to prove beyond the shadow of a doubt with actual written authorization, documentation, that they were authentic Kohanim. Then you have other Kohanim who think they were Kohanim. Their father told them they were a Kohanim. Their grandfather, as far back as they remember, they were Kohanim, but they couldn't really prove it. And when it came to Avodas HaMikdash, so the halacha differentiates that in the Beis HaMikdash, only if you could prove that you're a Kohen beyond the shadow of a doubt, can you do the Avodah. Otherwise, Ve'igolum and Akahuna. So the question is, what does this mean? What is this based on? And what are the potential ramifications for this? So this sugya.
It's never so you have to prove the document.
But you have to be able to prove. The document has Adam signed off on it, saying that my father was a Kohen, my grandfather has documentations here. Right. Those are Ksav Yichus that existed in the days of Bayis Risha, and into Bayis Sheni there were Kohanim Yichasim, but there are many who weren't. Of course, today we don't have any real Kohanim Yichasim. Some Kohanim that are around have perhaps more authentic Yichus than others, but nobody has those real formal documentation all the way back to Bayis Sheni. The question is, what do we do with that? What, if any, are nafkaminas ladina for us? No, unfortunately, we're not doing avodas and kabanas, so what does this mean for us, if anything? So this issue was somewhat theoretical for hundreds, almost thousands of years, and then all of a sudden this issue became a potentially loaded question with possible nafkaminas lahalacha. A little bit of a background that many of you are familiar with, an individual by the name of Tzvi Hirsch Kalischer. Tzvi Hirsch Kalischer was a Rav in Europe back in around the 1800s or so, early 1800s, and he had a grandiose plan. His grandiose plan was that we're going to try to bring some people back to Eretz Yisrael. We're going to start to offer Karbanos again, and everything's going to be wonderful. Everything's going to be great. So, of course, there were a couple of technical glitches. One technical glitch was that the Ottoman Turks were in charge of the Makom HaMikdash, so that never stood in anybody's way. As we know, it's a good price for anything. So he actually raised money, and he got some, if I'm not mistaken, some of the Rothschild family to put it. Listen, if you got your name sponsored, today's Korban Talmud is sponsored by the following, by the following family. I think anyone would be more happy to do that. So he got some money, and they actually try to pay off the Turks to give them the right to go on to the Makom HaMikdash. In the end, it didn't work. The whole thing, the Turks weren't interested in doing business with us. They weren't interested in a bunch of guys running around offering karbanos to the Makom HaMikdash. So the mice never happened. But in the process of this grandiose plan, he decided that he's going to consult with some of the Gedolim in Europe at the time and to see what their input is. What do they think about this? So he sent letters to Rabbi Kiveger. He sent letters to the Chassam Sofer. Letters to the Aruch HaNer. Aruch HaNer was Rabbi Yaakov Edlinger. He was the Rebbe of Rabbi Shmuel Shofal Hirsch. So he spread throughout Europe. He tried to get a sense as to what some of the Rabbanim at the time thought about this plan. So one of the issues that came up in the discussion was, even in Tzolomar, that somehow we're going to be able to overcome some of the other logistical hurdles, who's going to do the Avodah? Which Kohanim exactly are we going to use? Nobody has this Ksav Yichus anymore. And the Pesukim and Ezra say, Ve'igolam in Akuna, that you cannot have a Kohen serving the Beis HaMikdash if he doesn't have this authentic Ksav Yichus. So there was a big machlekes acharonim, how to understand this halacha and what the potential ramifications are for us today. So there was some acharonim, which were really the minority view, that maintained that it's really a problem and it's an insurmountable problem. And in fact, any Kohen today who cannot bring absolute 100% documentation that he's a Kohen going back thousands of years is treated as a Sufi Kohen. We're not going to let him go to the cemetery. We're not going to let him marry a woman he's not permitted to marry. But can we say with certainty that he's a Kohen? We're not sure. That's why Ezra and Nehemiah didn't let them do Avodah, because we're just not sure whether he's a Kohen. If you take that approach, then the game's over. No, we don't have. We have to wait until. You have a koil urmatur. We have to wait till we get koanim yuchasim again. But many, many other poskim, perhaps the majority of the poskim, Rabbi Kivegas, Sam Seif, and others said that's not correct. That is not true. That we have a principle in Allah called the Chazaka, that if my father told me, as far back as he can remember, he was a Kohen, and he remembers from his father, so we assume that the person is a Kohen. We assume that nothing went wrong along the way. We assume that if a person his family has been knowing Dini Kohuna for as far back as anyone can remember, so we assume that Min HaTorah, they're considered to be Kohanim Gemurim. Belishum Sofik. It's not a Sofik, it's not a doubt. They are considered to be Kohanim. So what is this? What do these Pesukim mean that they can't do Avodah? It was a Chumrah, Lechetchila. If you have two Kohanim in front of you, one who has the Ksav Yichos, so one doesn't, so why should you pick the B'di Avikohen? Pick the one who has the Ksav Yichos, he's a better, more Mahudidik Kohen. So pick him over the other one. But push comes to shove, if there was no other Kohen around, so we take this Kohen also. It's not that we're saying that the Kohen without Ksav Yichos is a Sofik Kohen. What kind of Sofik? Chazaka teaches us that his father, the grandfather, as far back as anyone can remember the Kohanim, we assume that the Kohanim, authentic Kohanim. It's a lechetchila, if and when we're able to do it, not to use them for avodah. Therefore, b'kiveiget nechsam sofer, right, b'zman hazeh, we can't observe this lechetchila, because we don't have any choice. So therefore, a regular kohen, gave a guy an aliyah this morning, for kohen, he can serve in the Beis HaMikdash. We have no qualms, no hesitations of having him serve in the Beis HaMikdash. So this, machloikis, the poskim, again, unfortunately, has not yet been implemented lahalacha, but according to many poskim, probably most poskim, we would be able to overlook this halacha, that this halacha is only lechetchila, it's not ma'akev, and it's not a real bona fide suffix. This shaila of how we view Kohanim today, in the absence of Ksav Yichos, do we view them as a little bit of a doubt for whether they're really authentic Kohanim, or we say, no, they're real, full-fledged, 100% bona fide Kohanim, can have some very real naskamidas l'dina for us, and that is as follows. There's a Pischa Tshuva on the next day of my Mekomos concerning Pidyon HaBen. Pischa Tshuva quotes from Rav Yaakov Emden, Shelis Yavetz, who has the following Chiddush. The Gemara tells us in Maseches Kedushin that technically speaking, when you do Pidyon HaBen, you can give the money to the Kohen on the condition that he returns it to you. There's a whole complicated story about Lechet Chilam, but the evidence, whether he knows what's going on, we're leaving out the details of Pidyon HaBen, but there is such a concept of potentially doing Pidyon HaBen on Manas Lahachzir. So says the Pischa Tshuva in the name of Yaakov Emden, the Ha'idna Shekosav, the Ha'idna Ishtani Dina, the Ma'ash Amu Shuloye Kohen Ragol B'kach, that which the Shulchan Aruch writes that it's not right for the Kohen to always give the money back, Hani Mil B'Kohanim Yuchasav Ditu. That was in the olden days when we knew for a fact that the Kohen was really a Kohen. But B'Kohani Chazoka B'Alma, the Kohanim that we have today, that Yaakov Emden's writing in the 1700s, our Kohanim today, even though we have to be machmir and we treat them like Kohanim, we do Pidyon HaBen, we have no choice. Who else are we going to use? He says that the Kohen himself should not keep the Pidyon HaBen money. You know why? Because it's a shtichel gezeila. It's a safek gezeila. How does he know that he's an authentic Kohen? Well, the pachos kol Kohen yochash liatzmo. Even if we can't say this as an absolute psach that he must return the money, if the Kohen wants to know, what should he do? Lifrosh misafik gezel she'em a Kohen. Any Kohen who really, really wants to be observant, wants to be careful, should return the Pidyon HaBen money, lest he be in violation of safik gezela. So clearly, Rav Yaakov Emden was viewing the Kohanim today as being shaky, as being questionable, whether they are full-fledged Kedusha, and therefore he was nervous, b'di'evet, to let the Kohen keep the money. Those who disagreed with that premise, Rabbi Kivege, the Chassam Sofer, everybody else, we paskin l'halacha, most of us do not follow this view of Yaakov Emden. The Kohen does not have to give. He wants to give it back, he can give it back, but we don't insist on the Kohen giving the money back today. We assume the Pidyon HaBen is good, kedas u'chadin, it's 100% valid, it's not a suffix. And then, Yaakov Emden continues, let's go skip down to the next line, the middle of the line by the period. Gam nira shall atzei sidei kol sofik have shari yesh gam ken ala av liftos bechoro mikol kohanim sheyuchal imtzo. Listen to this chumrah. Said you just did a Pidyon HaBen on day 31. How do you know he was a right? He was a real kohen. When you meet another kohen next week, give him another 5 shekel. And another. Well, the good news is, hopefully they're all doing it on Manas Lahachzir, so you get your money back. Otherwise, this can become very, very expensive. It is said that the Vilna Gaon used to be chashish. The Vilna Gaon was a bechor. He used to be chashish for this, but most people that I know of are not. Duma misrami lekohen yuchos vaday. And now catch this chumrah. Omehai time enami, bene kohenes valavia yeshuftos achshali sofek. If you happen to be your mother's a Bas Kohen, so you're walking around saying, I'm Potter from Pidgin Ben, really? How do you know she's a Bas Kohen? Maybe your grandfather's, that was never really a Kohen. So you should also do Pidgin Ben. So in one fell swoop, Rabbi Yaakov Emden transformed the entire mitzvah of Pidgin Ben today. The Midi Yisrael is not like any of the above. We give a regular Pidgin Ben today, we make a bracha today, we don't run around to all the Kohanim, the Bas Kohen, just Potter from Pidgin Ben. Why is all of that true? The answer most probably is because we assume halacha that Kohanim today are real, true, blue Kohanim, full-fledged Kohanim. It's a chumrah, l'chadchila, when you're able to, with the Rabbanon, for Beis HaMikdash, for Karbonos. But tachlis, a Kohen today, if your father's a Kohen, your grandfather's a Kohen, as far back as you remember, you're considered to be a Kohen. I'm always very, very weary whenever I quote the sugya, because I was once giving the shiur in Cambria Avenue, this goes back... over 30 years ago, I was giving the shiur once in Kerbi Avna. I was talking a little bit about the status of Kohanim Bizman Azeh. It was the middle of the winter time, and I made that statement that, according to some poskim, Kohanim today are only Suffolk Kohanim, and all of a sudden there was a bolt of lightning with thunder, and there was Hafsakat Chashmal. All the lights went off in the yeshiva. So that didn't bode well. So I said, no, please, I don't really mean it. We don't possibly that the lights went back on. No, that's not, the second part didn't happen. The first part definitely did happen. So I don't think there's a thunderstorm on the horizon for Beit Shemesh today. I don't think that's in the weather forecast. So we'll leave it at that. So the bottom line is most poskim assume that the Kohanim today are really bona fide Kohanim. One of the proofs that the Chassam Sefer brings that, of course, Kohanim today are bona fide Kohanim is from the fact that we do chin, that we do Birchas Kohanim today. Because if you take a look at the next of the Marmakomos, the Ramah writes, the Ein Lazar Lisa Kappa of Afilim Kohanim Bacherim, that a Zar, a non-Kohen, is not permitted to recite Birchas Kohanim. The simple reading of the Gemara in Maseches Ksubis, it's actually in Daf Yomi, I think, coming up in the next day or two, the simple reading of the Gemara is that for a non-Kohen to say Birchas Kohanim is an Issim in HaTorah. The Torah says, Amor Lehem, only the Kohanim are allowed to say Birchas Kohanim. If Yisrael does it, that's a violation of a Torah prohibition. So a Zar is not permitted to be to say Birchas Kohanim. The Ramah continues, the Zar over the essay, but there's a Tosus that says, the Tosus Perak Kisvei, Lo Yodah Rima Issa Yesh Bezar Ola, Ve'efshadim Kohanim Achayim Shavit Zerachiyun. So Tosus quotes a very, very cryptic statement from the Ri. The Ri was the nephew in the Talmud of Rabbeinu Tam. It seemed to be a hot topic, Kohanim, in that family, although they were not, Rabbeinu Tam was not a Kohen, but it was still an exciting topic. So they quote from the Ri that maybe, if a Kohen says Birchas Kohanim together, if Yisrael says Birchas Kohanim with other Kohanim, maybe that's not so bad. If Yisrael gets up on his own and gets up to Duchen and he's not a Kohen, that's an Issa Torah. If there are 20 other Kohanim and he's schlepping along also, maybe that's not so bad. Why not? Where did that come from? What's that distinction based on? So the Chassam Sofer in his notes on the side of Shulchan Aruch has a fascinating insight. He has a raya. The Chassam Sofer, I don't think he knew this part, is a raya from the Bar Kokhba coins. If you remember the back of one of those coins, there's a picture of Dalad Minim. There's a picture of Hadassim, and there are about 100 Hadassim in the mix. Wait a second. We know that you only have to have 3 Hadassim. So the Rambam writes that you can add on more Hadassim. Why are you allowed to add on more Hadassim? Because there's no violation of Bal Tosif whenever you're doing it for the purpose of Lahadiris HaMitzvah. When you're doing it to beautify the mitzvah, that's not Bal Tosif. Bal Tosif means you're not allowed to stand aside, I'm going to put on a fifth bias in my tefillin. That doesn't make the tefillin look any nicer. So that's hosofa, that's adding to the mitzvah. But if you're adding to the mitzvah to enhance the mitzvah, to beautify the mitzvah, that's okay. That's not called bal tosif. That's where the Rambam writes, if you take extra aravos, that's a problem, because the aravos don't look very nice. You add extra hadassim, that's okay. That's what many people do. I know many of the Sfarim do this, the Chabad they do this. Many people have multiple hadassim following that view of the Rambam. And that seems to have been the minhag back in the days of Vaisheni, as that, again, the coins have that actual picture of multiple hadassim in the Dalad Minim. So Chassam Sofer says that maybe that's what the Ramah and the Ri are driving at here also, that why is this Yisrael going up with the Kohanim? You have 10 Kohanim here, so why is he going up? The answer, because the other Kohanim, the Kohanim don't know how to sing. The Kohanim are all off key. So he's coming to help them. He's coming to make it look nicer. Or, you know, it's only 1 or 2 or 3 Kohanim, doesn't look so nice. So a couple of Yisrael go up also and say, you know, make the shul look a little fuller. Well, the Kohanim went on vacation, so it's going to look nicer. So if the Yisraelim are going to kind of boost up the Birchas Kohanim a little bit, make it look better, make it sound better, so maybe that's okay. Maybe that's not so terrible. So that's why perhaps there's a distinction. But under normal circumstances, for a non-Kohen to say Birchas Kohanim is an outright prohibition. That's why, in fact, the Mishnah Berurah has a discussion about a practice that many of us have. On Friday night, many of us give brachas to our children, and many of us say, I'm not a Kohen, so how can I do that? So the Mishnah Berurah tries to turn the world upside down to be malamitz chus on why people do that. So some people are so bothered with the kasha, they don't do it. They just say Yisimcha Lokim. They don't say Yivarecha. But those who say Yivarecha, continue to say Yivarecha. It's okay. The Mishabura has reasons to explain why it's okay. So says the Chassam Sofer, Kohanim today duchen. Just this morning, they duchen. How could the Kohanim duchen? Maybe they're not Kohanim. Maybe the Yisraelim. So the answer is it's not true. The whole thing is not true. Kohanim, a Kohanim. A Kohen's a Kohen. His father's a Kohen. His grandfather's a Kohen. Great grand. For Deirei Deiris, the Kohanim. There's a Chumra, Lechadchila. Maybe Ben HaMikdash. We're going to try to track down his Ksavichos. But for all Halachas of Kohuna, Chutzbe Avodas HaKorbanos, he's a Kohen for Pidyon HaBen, who gave him the first Aliyah, he duchits, he can't marry a Gusha, he can't go to the cemetery. He's a full-fledged Kohen, Bizban HaZeh. So the bottom line is, there are multiple dimensions of Kohuna. There's Kohuna B'Toras Mikdash, there's Kohuna Chutz Mikdash, the Kohanim Yuchosim, Kohanim Chazoka. But our Kohanim today can feel very, very much at ease, that according to the overwhelming majority of the Peskim, Kohanim today are full-fledged Kohanim. They're not wearing big dick kahuna, so maybe they can go to the store and pick up yogurts for you. But are they full-fledged kohanim? Yes, they are full-fledged kohanim. So you would think that our kohanim is such great kohanim today, we would take advantage of them and have them do all the mitzvahs as much as possible. So one of the mitzvahs that we have is the mitzvah biches kohanim, and all of a sudden we find that in Chutz La'aretz, there was a very, very strange custom. No one's exactly sure where this custom comes from, but there was a strange custom in Chutz La'aretz in the Ashkenazi communities not to recite Birchas Kohanim on a daily basis, not even on Shabbos, not even fully on Yom Tov, but the most communities in Chutz La'aretz, only Musaf on Yom Tov. So for all the times of the year, the only time that they would duchen would be on Musaf of Yom Tov. Again, in Eretz Yisrael, that's clearly not the minigur. Yisrael follows the practice of the Sfardim and what the Grof would be read in, and the minigur has gone back to the way it would originally have been, that duchening all the time. But in Chutz La'aretz, we'll remember, there's a standard practice in Ashkenazi communities not to recite Birchas Kohanim, and we're not really sure what this is based on. So the Ramon, and the next Nemar Makomos suggests the following: Nogu b'chol medinos elu she'eino simkapayim ela b'yomtiv, mishum she'as shvuyim b'simchas yomtiv. The reason why is because in order to give a real bracha, you have to be b'simcha. You have to be in a state of joy. The rest of the year we're so tarud, we're so busy with our panosa, such daigas. So a kohen doesn't have the right mindset to duchen. I guess in Eretz Yisrael, everyone's more relaxed. No one's so worried about parnasa. Everyone's good to go until everyone recites Birchas Kohanim. But in Chutz La'aretz, we're more worried, says the Rama. For Tov Lev Hu Yivarech, only a person who has a good heart, he's full of joy, can give a bracha. Mashen Ki B'Shay Yomim. Afilu B'Shabbos Tashana. Even on Shabbos, let's be honest, says the Rama. Shetru Dibir Hurim HaMichas Opitam Alachtam. Shabbos, we're also, the guy's already, you know, he's already thinking about his business, the Yom Tzor Shabbos, he's already thinking about the phone calls, the emails he's got to answer, the Bin Abdullah's over. And Yom Tov, we're more relaxed. If so, so why don't we duchen at Shachris also? So catch this one. Rafilu B'Yom Tov, Ein Nosek Gabayim Elevat Tfilas Mosov, Shiyotzim Azbi Beisak Neses, V'yismichu B'simchas Yom Tov. Because we're already out the door, we're already leaving. What does the Ramah mean? He sounds like he's saying as follows, that the Shachris, people aren't so happy yet. There's a long drosh ahead. There's a long schlep, a lot of mishaberach for all the mishanadars, for all the you got a shlepzachat musaf. By the time I see the light of day, it's another 2 hours. The kohen can't muster up that joy. By musaf is he can already smell the kiddush already in the back. He's ready good to go. So then v'yismachu b'simchas yom tov. That's what the Ramah writes. What's the source for this? Divrei Atzma. The Ramah's own idea. He said he doesn't know. He doesn't have a source for this. It's his own suggestion. There are others who suggest a fascinating reason why the minig became not to duchen on weekdays or even on Shabbos is because you can only duchen, you can only recite Birchas Kohanim in the context of Chazor Sashatz. It's only considered to be Chazor Sashatz if 10 people are answering Amen. So when the Chazan gets up and nobody's paying attention to what the Chazan's saying, so it's a whole shot, how could the Chazan even say Chazor Sashatz under those circumstances? So maybe it's not really Chazor Sashatz, it's not Chazor Sashatz, then you can't duchen. So Bekoshi and Yom Tov Musaf time, maybe people are paying attention, maybe people are happy. But I guess in Eretz Yisrael, people are much more paying attention to Chazor Sashatz. No one's running out the door, so they're more comfortable duchening. So again, no one's quite sure what the source for this reason, for this minig is, but this became the standard minig in Chutz La'aretz. There is a famous story, a real story, a legend about the Vilna Gaon, that the Vilna Gaon wanted to change this minig, that he felt that it was not appropriate, that we should go back to the old minig, to the correct minig, so to speak, of the Sfardim, and duchen every day in Chutz La'aretz, and he announced that tomorrow in his shul in Vilna, they're going to duchen. The way the legend goes is that the shul burned down that night. So I didn't say somebody burnt it down, but the shul burnt down. So the next day, they asked the Gro, what do we do? He said, not going to duchen. So they asked him, Rebbe, lo b'shamayimi, we don't paskin shilas based on supernatural things. So he said, no, I'm still right. We should duchen, but I don't want all the shuls in Vilna to burn down. Again, that's the legend, if it happened or not. I wasn't in France in the 1100s. I wasn't in Vilna in the 1700s. I can't tell you. I'm Bekeshe Beit Shemesh in the 2000s. But again, that's the way the story goes. So in Chutzlarts, we're kind of still stuck with this custom of not duchening on a regular day, unless, again, those are davening in actual Shvayde B'Yonim, so can chaparai in the duchening. There are some people in YU who run every day to go hear the Birchas Karim, because there's one Shvayde Minyan, the Shvayde Shul and Morg, so some people like to go hear duchening every day. There's a Sefer Charedim that maintains that there's a mitzvah on the Yisrael, L'Hisbarech. And not only is there a mitzvah in the coin to say the bracha, there's a mitzvah in the Israel to receive the bracha. So I know some people like to go run to that. I'm usually not in yeshiva early enough to get to that minyan, but there are some people who are machped on that. There is another dimension of kahuna, which is more in the realm of Yisurim, that has to be discussed b'zman hazeh, a theme of past, present, and future. So how this halacha plays out b'zman hazeh, that's the issue of Tumas Kohanim. We know the Torah tells us in Parashas Emor that there's an Issur min HaTorah for a Kohen to become Tamei L'Meis. Becoming Tamei L'Meis either means touching a mace or moving a mace or being in the same room, being in the same oil as a mace. So how do these halachas play out today? So the answer is presumably they do play out. Presumably a Kohen is not permitted to do any of the above. So there is a major machloikis, which has in Chutz Laaretz, has very, very serious ramifications about how this plays out in terms of a non-Jewish mace. So there is a machlekes at Tanoim, Rechlekes Hashem at Paskin, whether a non-Jewish mace is subject to Tumas Ohel. There are some Tanoim, Rechlekes Hashem at Paskin, of the opinion that a non-Jewish mace is not subject to Tumas Ohel. He's subject to Tumas Magal Mas, you can't touch or move it, but to be in the same room, to be under the same Ohel, would be permissible according to some, and according to others, that's not the case. How do we Paskin? So the Shulchan Aruch, and the next of the Ramah Kamas writes, Kivri of the Kichavim, to go to a non-Jewish cemetery, to be in the same room with a non-Jewish mace, Nochon Lizora Kamil Erechaleim. So the Shulchan Aruch writes that it's appropriate to be machmir. That lashon is a little bit of a parva lashon, because it sounds like he's passing the ikra didn't like the shita sarambam following Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai that it's really permissible. But Rabbi Natan disagreed, others disagreed. Nochem lizor. It's not the right thing to do is not to go to a non-Jewish cemetery, not to go to a non-Jewish funeral, etc. And then the Ramah continues after the sheish bekilim. There is some more mekil for nochem lachmir. And the Ramah also writes, it's preferable to be machmir. So here it's strange, you have both the Shulchan Aruch and the Ramah, they both agree that it's probably mutter, mi'ikar adin, but it's not preferred. The best thing to do is to avoid the shayla. Is there any more wiggle room, any more room to be a little bit more lenient today? So the Pesachei Tshuva, on the last of the Ramakomos, quotes from the Nedi B'Yehuda, Ayim B'Dogo Me'Vava, Shekasa V'Zel Shem, Dogo Me'Vava with the notes of the Nedi B'Yehuda on the margin of Shulchan Aruch. They were not meant to be published. The Nedi B'Yehuda, in his own personal Shulchan Aruch, wrote some ha'aras that he had. He published plenty of svarim. He never planned on publishing these. After he died, his children found, they opened up the Shulchan Aruch, they found these notes, and they published it afterwards. So that's why every once in a while, there are contradictions between what it says in the notes and what it says in the tshuvas, because he never meant this as a final psak. These are ha'aras. These are as he was learning. So thoughts came to his mind, so he wrote them up. But they're not as authoritative as the psakim of the tshuvas, as the tshuvas are actually written by the Nedi B'Yehuda for publication. But there's still anything written by the pen of the Nedi B'Yehuda is worthwhile our study. So the Nedi B'Yehuda writes the following: Shukosav, v'das harayvit prakeim in Nezirus lachiyad zayin. He dug up a rayvit in Huchas Nezirus that says v'hecha shekvar tamei shuv eina muzer la tuma. The rayvit says that once a kohen is already tamei, then as long as he hasn't yet had Efer Paraduma, which we haven't had, every couple of years there's always a story about, oh, they dug up a Paraduma, they found the Paraduma in Eretz Yisrael, in Lakewood, and for every year or two they dig up a Paraduma. I'm still waiting for somebody to do something with it. So far, there must have been 100 Paradumas in the last 20 years that they dug up somehow and never reached fruition. So the bottom line is, the Ravid says, we don't have a Paraduma anymore. Once the coin became Tamei one time, he's Tamei Liolam Vaed, and he's no longer prohibited to become Tamei, because the Isser on a coin to become Tamei is on a coin Tohar to become Tamei. But if you're Tamei already, then it's okay. Therefore, Kohanim is Banazah, Enim is Amal HaTuma. Unbelievable. It's Achirish and the Shittas HaRaivit. The Aftalo Kaiblan Ka'Raivit, says the Nebuta, we don't follow this Raivit. Nobody follows this Raivit. We come Mokom, but Meis, Eidik Kechavim, Ika Sveik Sveika. If it's a non-Jewish body, and you want to be in the same room as a non-Jewish body, so maybe we can make a Sveik Sveika out of this. Maybe the non-Jewish body is not Tomei. And even if Tom Saloma, that it's Tomei, maybe the Raivit's right. So it's a shtichel sveik sveika. This Sveg Sveg would be very, very helpful for a lot of people, particularly people in the medical field, other fields that have these kinds of shilas. This would be a tremendous, tremendous kula. Those who want to rely on this shtickle double doubt, the Sveg Sveg, maybe it's okay. Veshuv Kosov. Then in the next line he writes, nah, I just take back, just retracted that kula. The chomash of the safted mishachtech a different mishle melech. Regularly, although the daita sover raivich and it's a klal the koinchik fanit melatami atzmo. I was assuming, says the Neid Yehuda, following in the footsteps of the mishle melech, that the raivid meant it's literally mutter for a coin today to become tamei. Aval achshav nesafti alibi shulai lomra raivid lirchil malchus. If you look carefully at the raivid never said it's mutter. The raivid said maybe you're not chayav malchus. It's a far cry from being mutter. Therefore, I backed off my entire kula. In fact, the Ravid, there's another source from the Ravid that the Nebbi didn't have, that the second version is correct. The Ravid never really said it's mutter, mutter, mutter. He said maybe it's Nochia Malkus, but it's not at all Pashut, and it's actually mutter. And therefore, for all practical purposes, this Ravid doesn't exist. For our purposes in Allah, we don't rely on this Ravid. So it plays a role. The Gemara says that min haTorah, if there's a pesach tefach, so min haTorah that'll solve the problem. But with the Rabbanan, they made a gezeira that since some aronos don't have pesach tefach, all aronos are considered to be tamei. It's in one third of the pesach's brachas. So again, there were some who wanted to bring this ravid, no pun intended, back to life, and wanted to potentially, you know, be mitzdarfin and maybe kulas, and then the Rabbeinu Tams and then the Rambams, and wanted to put together different kinds of kulas. It's not the best thing to do. A person should try to take the additive. A person has a particular shaila, should consult with the Rav about it. But as a general rule, I remember several years ago there was this exhibition in downtown Manhattan. It was called, I think Bodies. It was basically dead bodies. And it was body parts or something, some scientific exhibition or somewhere. So I remember I got a call from, it was like the senior dinner at YU or something. Some guy calls me and he says, Rebbe, I'm at the senior dinner and the senior dinner is being held in the same place, much in the next, you know, the same hotel, the same museum, whatever it is, where this whole exhibition is, and I'm a Kohen. So should I leave or not? So I said, well, the Bechaber and the Ramah both say that you're really not supposed to be Mekel on this. These are dead bodies, the Goyisha bodies, we assume, and it's too much oil, you're not really supposed to be Mekel. So Bishasa Chagogel, the Polskim are Mekel. So I said to him, if you consider the YU senior dinner to be a Shasa Chagogel, maybe it's your, I don't remember to be such a Shasa Chagogel. So Yesh Lahachmer, I think, under those circumstances. So again, different Rabbanim, different Sokhum, depending on the degree of necessity, whether we could possibly be Mekel, because the Shulchan Aruch and the Ramah both do hold that Mikra Din is probably going to be permissible. So up until now, we've been talking mostly in the world of Halacha. I want to segue a little bit into the world of Machshava about almost what our dream is about Hashem Kohanim Levadosam, about the future. In order to understand the future, you have to understand what the past was. So we begin with the paradigm of Kohuna, as we began this year, with Aaron HaKohen. So Aaron HaKohen was the Kohen par excellence, the first Kohen, the Kohen Gadol, and he set the stage for really what Kohuna is all about. So we... The Hashkaf part's not going to be so long. We don't need the... Okay, keep it filled up. Okay, good. It's all good. Keep me rolling. Is it coincidental that we find Aaron HaKohen excelling in two different dimensions? He's the Kohen par excellence, which means, as we start off this year, he's the Mikdash, he's the Mishkan, he's the Klei Mikdash, he's the Big Tikuna, he's the Kohen Gadol. But we find a whole other dimension of Aaron HaKohen. As the Mishnah tells in Pirkei Avos, Hevem et Tamidav shel Aaron, Oev Shalom, Rodev Shalom, Oev es Abrios, Makar from the Torah, a whole other part of Aaron HaKohen. Notice, there's no mention there of his role as offering Karbanos in the base of Mikdash. Here he's being depicted as the Oev Shalom, Rodev Shalom, as almost a unifying force within Klal Yisrael. And the answer is, it's not a contradiction. Actually, the two things complement one another, because if we really understand what the two roles of the Beis HaMikdash are, then it makes perfect sense why Aaron HaKohen really, in a sense, wears those two hats, in terms of the Oved HaKavonos, as well as the Miyachid of Klal Yisrael. There is a sugya that appears in Masechet Shkolim, where the Mishnah discusses about whether a Kohen is supposed to give money for Machtas HaShekel. Why should I say that a Kohen doesn't give money for Machtas HaShekel? So the Gemara is a fascinating lumdish reason that the Kohen, if he gives money for Machtas HaShekel, then he owns a portion of the Karbanos. some of the karbanos that are purchased with matzah shekel are karban menachos, the lechem aponim, the karban omer, the shteilach of shavuos. But it will turn out that the kohen owns a share of those karbanos menachos, and there's a halacha that a minchas kohen lo seyochel, a minchas kohen is not allowed to be eaten, and there's a mitzvah to eat these karbanos. So therefore, one could argue a kohen is potter from giving the money because he's going to have a share in the mincha. It's going to be a minchas kohen, and that's going to be disqualified from eating. So the Mishnah quotes that the Kohanim used to paskin that way, and Rabbi Yochanan Zakkai made fun of them. He said, no, Kohanim darshu mikras only atzvan. They made up the shtickle Torah because they were cheap. They didn't want to give machta shekel, so they came up with this razzle dazzle shtickle Torah. The shtickle Torah was wrong, but the Mishnah never explains why it was wrong. Sounds pretty good. So what was wrong with the shtickle Torah? So the Gemara never explained. So the many of the Mefarshim explain, but the answer is as follows: when a korban tzibur is brought, it does not belong to Mr. Cohn and Mr. Levy and Mr. Israel and Mr. There's a new entity. It's like a corporation in halacha. The entity is called Klal Yisrael. It's called the Tzibur of the Jewish people. A korban tzibur is not a korban hashutzpin. It's not just a bunch of partners that join together. It's a new thing. It's a new korban. So therefore, it's not called the Minchas Kohen. It's called the Minchas Klal Yisrael. That's a tremendous chiddush that korbanos could do. That's the power of a korban tzibur. We just read this morning's Kriyas HaTorah about Parshat HaTomid, Parshat HaMusafin, Shabbos, Rosh Chodesh, and Yontif. That ability to unite Klal Yisrael, that ability to take multiple people and turn them into one functioning unit, that's an amazing thing. That's part of the Korach of the Mikdash. Who is the individual who can do that? How do you have a person who's able to take a bunch of individuals who don't necessarily get along and somehow combine them together, unify them together? You have to have a personality like Aharon HaKohen. You have to be someone who is Ohev Shalom, Rodev Shalom, Ohev Sabrios, and Makar V'Torah. If a person just wears the hat of the Ovid HaAvoda and is not that person of the Ohev Shalom, Rodev Shalom, he's not going to be able to accomplish what the Korban Tzibur, what the role of the Beis HaMikdash is supposed to accomplish. So that unifying feature of the Beis HaMikdash is so significant. And perhaps that's part of why it's not coincidental that the death of Aharon HaKohen takes place on Rosh Chodesh Av. Because Rosh Chodesh Av is really the halachic beginning of the Zman of Avelus. We as Ashkenazim, we're already well into the 3 weeks. But the concept of the 3 weeks is really a minig. Nothing really halachically occurs, starting from Shavuos HaBetamuz. The real Avelus for the Churban begins with Mishenichnas Av Matan V'Simcha. Some of the halachas begin Shavuos Shachal, but there is a halachic concept called Mishenichnas Av Matan V'Simcha. So it is not at all coincidental that the death of Aharon HaKohen, thousands of years before, precipitates the downfall of the Beis HaMikdash. Because when Aharon HaKohen isn't there, when there's pagam, when there's pagia, when there's something lacking in the unity of Klal Yisrael, then chalila v'chalila, the Churban is right around the corner. It is not surprising that in the Haftorahs, particularly in next week's Haftorah, Shabbos Chazon, where the psukim that speak about Churban, so the introduction to the Churban is the fact that there's fighting, there's people not taking care of each other, that there's injustice that's taking place. All the terrible things that are being depicted in the Nevuah of Chazon and Shiob and Amot, next week's Haftorah, are basically setting the stage for Churban, because the Kadosh Baruch Hu was basically telling us that if the goal of the Beis HaMikdash is to unite Klal Yisrael around the banner of Avodas HaKorbanos and to come together as a tzibur, and if you can't figure out how to do that properly, so then, in a certain sense, what do you need the Beis HaMikdash for? The death of Aharon HaKohen, Mishnichas Av Matan V'Simcha, that's something that speaks to Klal Yisrael for Dori Doris, thousands of years after the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed. So, yes, we mourn about the past, and yes, we speak a little bit about the present, and the bulk of today's Shia was to focus on about the present role of Kohanim, with, of course, the eye to the future. So we hope and pray that the Kadosh Baruch Hu should bless us to have those Kohanim who could lead us, the footsteps of Tamidim, Heaven be Tamidim, Shalom and Kohen, could lead Klal Yisrael to the next step, where we can come, Hashem Kohanim Levadosam, Levim, Lashim, Lazimim, Hashem Yisrael, and Vayim, we should be Zocha together, that the month of Av should be Nepach, Leo's days of Nechama, and days of Sasa and Simcha. We should celebrate again, once again, Vashik Kwanam Abadosim. Shabbos to you.